Gird your loins and light your lamps, and be like servants who await their master's return from a wedding, ready to open up immediately when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds vigilant on his arrival. Amen, I say to you, he will gird himself, have them recline at table, and proceed to wait on them. Should he come in the second or the third watch and find them prepared in this way, blessed are those servants. Be sure of this. If the master of the house had known the hour when the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be prepared, for at an hour you do not expect, the Son of Man will come. Then Peter said, Lord, is this parable meant for us or for everyone? And the Lord replied, who then is the faithful and prudent steward, whom the master will put in charge of his servants to distribute their food allowance at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom the master upon his arrival finds doing so. Truly I say to you, that master will put the servant in charge of all his property. But if the servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the men servants and the maid servants, to eat and drink and get drunk, then that servant's master will come on an unexpected day at an unknown hour, and will punish the servant severely and assign him a place with the unfaithful. That servant who knew his master's will, but did not make preparations nor act in accord with his will, shall be beaten severely. And the servant who was ignorant of his master's will, but acted in a way deserving of a severe beating, shall be beaten only lightly. Much will be required of the person entrusted with much, and still more will be demanded of the person entrusted with more. The Gospel of the Lord. During the grace of this year of faith, the Lord wants to help each of us grow in faith, which is the most important way a human being can grow. The year of faith began 10 months ago today, and hence it's an excellent opportunity for us to examine whether, since October 11th, we have responded to that divine assistance to grow in faith. Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, the greatest American Catholic preacher of all time, used to say that there are no plateaus in the spiritual life. Either we're going uphill or we're sliding downhill. Either our faith is increasing or it's decreasing. It never stays the same. Faith, as Pope Benedict reminded us as we began this holy year, is a lifelong journey, a pilgrimage following the Lord each day. If we're not moving on that journey, if we're staying where we were yesterday, our faith isn't growing. But in a pilgrimage, there's always exertion involved. God comes each day to guide us, to teach us, to nourish us, to accompany us. But we need to get up from where we are and follow him to where he wants to lead us. In short, faith means that we give God total permission, a blank check, to change us any way he wants to. Throughout the entire year of faith, today's readings are the most powerful we'll find on any Sunday, about how we are to give God that blank check and live by faith. In the Gospel, Jesus describes the characteristics of a faithful and wise disciple, the type of disciple he wants each of us to be. In the second reading, the letter to the Hebrews defines faith for us and then describes it in a very powerful, unforgettable way in the life of the one we call our Father in faith. Let's listen attentively to what God is trying to teach us today about the journey on which he wants to guide us to become more and more like Abraham, more and more like the wise and faithful steward he praises. in the gospel. Jesus describes the life of faith as living each day as we would live if Jesus were visibly right at our side. He says that the faithful person is one whose heart seeks the inexhaustible treasure of heaven and begins even now to seek to amass that treasure with money bags that do not wear out through using our lives and our belongings for God and others. He says that the faithful person is always ready for a journey with loins girt and the lamp of his heart burning with love awaiting the Lord, ready to open immediately when he comes and knocks. We can think of waiting for someone we really love to arrive and how prompt we are to head to the door in those circumstances. Remember when I was a kid, I think I may have mentioned it once, my dad would leave for work very early, come back almost 4:15 every day. Around 4:10, my black Labrador retriever, whose name was Toby, would start to pace around the house with the tail wagging. All of us kids were waiting for the brakes to screech on our old Ford van, because then no matter where we were in the house, we would run to the back door just hoping to be the first one to jump up into my dad's strong arms and give him kisses and welcome him home. When we love someone, that's the way we behave. We wait. And when they're there, we immediately spring into action. And the greater the love, the greater the immediacy. That's what Jesus is talking about today. The faithful person seeks to be always vigilant for God's coming, so that we may respond promptly when and however he knocks on the door of our heart through his word, through an event, especially through prayer. The faithful person has this loving, living alertness, even in the second or third watch of the night, 12 p.m., midnight, 3 a.m. The faithful disciple guards his heart, lest any intruders or thieves seek to break in. She'll always be found at work, being a trustworthy steward of the Lord's gifts. This faithful disciple will be acting, in short, in the Lord's supposed absence, just as if the Lord were physically and visibly present. And Jesus promises that all such servants will be blessed. This is an incredible lesson for us about how to live by faith. If you examine the writings of the Desert Fathers, those early members of the church who in the 3rd and the 4th century would go out to spend their entire life on prayer, they wrote some incredibly helpful books to us even 1700 years later. And they said one of the most important spiritual principles of all is what they called anamnesis. We have the anamnesis right after the consecration. We translate it into English, the memorial acclamation, in which with a living memory we bring into the present all Christ has done for us. But we get our word amnesia from the Greek word to forget. In an, in Greek, means not. So the principle of anamnesis means unforgetting. They said that that's one of the most important spiritual principles of all. That, in essence, we remember, we unforget that God is always with us. They taught us that one of the main ways the devil seeks to attack our faith is by getting us to forget that God is present. Because the devil recognized that if we knew God were present, helping us, loving us, with us at every instant, few of us would ever choose against him. And so the devil first seeks to get us to forget about God, so that he can then tempt us in God's supposed absence. Jesus describes what happens when we forget God later in the gospel. He describes an unfaithful servant who says, "My master's late. Woohoo!" And then he starts to think he can do whatever he wants in the meantime. He begins to beat the servants, to pig out, and to get smashed, to hurt others, and to live for his pleasures alone, abusing the responsibilities, the talents, the gifts the Master had given him. Behaviors he would never have done if the Master were there. He thinks he'll always have time to change his behavior later, to tidy things up, to get his act together before he has to render an accounting. Such a steward is plainly unfaithful, just as unfaithful as a husband or wife would be if he or she cheated on a spouse in that spouse's absence, thinking that he or she wouldn't get caught. Eventually, an unfaithful servant, Jesus tells us, will get caught off guard, not because the Master wants to ambush us and catch us red-handed, but because the more we get used to thinking that the return won't occur today, that it won't occur right now, that the Lord's not really here, the more we're not prepared to answer immediately the knock of the Master, the less one will be ready at the time the Master does come. The way we're always ready for the Lord, it's when we're ready for Him opening at each instant to His presence. That way we're never caught off guard. In this year of faith, it's key for us to make some practical application of what Jesus is describing to us about our day. Are we truly alert for His presence, with lamps burning, loins girt, to let Him lead us on a journey to deeper faith each day? Or do we forget Him most of our day, and for most of our week, and for most of our life? One test of this, I think, is to see how we would spend our day if we could actually be aware of Jesus next to us through all our senses. If we could unforget Him and remember that He's constantly present. I'm convinced if we had that awareness, that presence of God, few of us would ever choose to sin, because we would recognize that such a choice would be to say, "Give me Barabbas," instead of "Give me Christ." And most of us, I hope out of love, but if not out of a holy fear, would never choose against the Lord in such circumstances. We would never get bombed in His presence. We would never curse in His presence. We would never hurt others in His presence. But far beyond not choosing against Him, if we could see Him, I think so many of our other ordinary choices with regard to how we would be faithful stewards of the time God has given us would likewise change. So many of us waste our time on frivolities, game shows, reruns, soap operas, talk shows, surfing the web, and other distractions, when we could be using that time to grow in faith and to serve God and others with love. I can't believe any of us would say to Jesus, if we were conscious of His presence, "Hey Jesus, dude, thanks for coming by. Let's spend the next half hour watching Wheel of Fortune together. Or let's spend the whole night watching the Red Sox play the Kansas City Royals." Jesus says that where our treasure is, there will our heart be. And one of the ways we determine where our treasure is where we spend our time. If a student were aware of Jesus' presence, the student would not cut corners, but put in his or her best effort. If a worker were aware of Jesus' presence, the worker would likely show up a few minutes early and work with a totally different spirit. Perhaps most importantly, if we were aware of His presence, we would seek to prioritize what He prioritizes, to talk about what He wants to discuss, to do with Him what He wants to do through us. Trusting in His help, we would stop wasting so much of the gift of the time He has given us, that we would become true stewards of that time and begin really to grow in faith by leaps and bounds, by discussing with Him what He's revealed to us in sacred scripture, by conversing with Him in that loving heart-to-heart chat we call prayer, by loving others together with Him, by coming with Him to worship the Father, by seeking to introduce Him to our friends and family, and seeking to facilitate their coming to have their life totally changed by Him. This year of faith is intended to bring about this type of friendship, this type of loving relationship, so that all of us become full-time disciples with hearts treasuring what God treasures, burning with love for Him, and always conscious of His accompanying us at our side. Our second reading from the letter to the Hebrews describes for us in greater detail what faith is and what distinguishes this life of faith. It tells us faith is the assurance of what is hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. The faithful person is one who is absolutely certain that the promises made by the Lord not only will be fulfilled later, but are already being partially fulfilled now. God's already giving us a down payment now, that we're already experiencing in embryo what the full organism will be later. That's the first thing about faith. What's one clear application of that? If the real hope that we have is eternal life of love with God, God already gives us a chance to enter into that life here through prayer, in which we know God and we're known by Him, and especially through the Eucharist, because heaven is an eternal mass, as we see in the book of Revelation. And that's why it pains me so much when so many Catholics don't come to Mass or don't really make prayer the defining reality of their life, because they're not preparing themselves for heaven. God already gives us now an opportunity to experience something of what He wants to give us totally later. That's the first condition. Even though we can't see it, the letter to the Hebrews says, we're totally convinced about the invisible realities of faith. That's the second condition. The faithful person is totally assured of God's holy presence, even if he can't see Him, feel Him, or hear Him. He's totally convinced that the Lord has already given him a foretaste of the true treasure, and therefore unhesitatingly places his value in the truths of faith more than any other security. The letter to the Hebrews then goes on to describe what it defines about faith in the life of various Old Testament heroes. Today it describes for us how Abraham, our father in faith, lived with the assurance of what is hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. How Abraham unforgot God and based his entire life on the Lord's promises. Abraham was so sure of the Lord's promises, so convinced in the reality of who God is, and therefore in the content of what God promised him, that at 75 years old, he packed up his entire livelihood and moved to a faraway land that God had vowed to show him later, eventually. He didn't reveal to him the destination, whether it would be the Breaker's mansion down in Newport, or whether it would be a house that can't even be sold for a dollar in downtown Detroit. God certainly didn't reveal to Abraham that he would have to fight for the land as a senior citizen. But regardless, because Abraham had faith in God, he packed up all his belongings and went on a journey of faith, trusting that God would lead him. As I like to say, God never tells us, stay exactly where you are. Don't move. Don't change. Rather, He's always challenging us to follow Him, to go more deeply, to grow, even in ways that we might find uncomfortable, even in ways we might not want to. He, out of love, never gives up, and He's calling us to change in those ways. Thinking of God's asking a senior citizen to pack up and move brings to mind how many seniors eventually need to move out of their homes to a smaller home, or even to a nursing home, when their loved ones can no longer give them 24/7 care. I've seen many respond with faith to these circumstances, but I've also witnessed in my priesthood many others respond very poorly, refusing to leave a place of so many happy memories and go to a new place, even though the Lord will be with them. Likewise, we're seeing that God is asking many Catholics, young and old, to make a similar journey during the time of many parish mergers. Catholics are being asked in faith to leave the place of so many beautiful spiritual memories, to go to a new parish together with the Lord and continue to worship Him there. Some make this transition with faith, knowing that God's with them, but others resist, wanting everything just to stay the same. The point of the call of Abraham to leave Ur of the Chaldees is that God never ceases to continue calling us on the journey of faith, even when we're old. And we should be ready. But that was just the beginning of Abraham's journey in faith. God promised the childless, aged Abraham that He would make him through Sarah the father of many nations, something that because of their ages was basically a biological impossibility. He brought Abraham outside and had him look up to the heavens and said, "Look up at the sky and count the stars if you can. Just so shall your descendants be." On Friday, the participants in our parish summer Bible camp heard in our study that the time in which God brought Abraham outside to look at the stars was not during the night. Because a few verses later it says, when the sun went down, Abraham did something else. It was in broad daylight that he took him outside to look at the stars. Now we can't see the stars in broad daylight, neither could Abraham. But he and we know that the stars are still there even if we can't see them. And that's what it was like with Abraham, already having that conviction of things not seen, knowing that he would be the father of many nations. And he trusted. And God continued to test that trust. You know, when people are very young, when they're a teenager, they think that they're never going to die, or that death will be millennia down the road. When you're a senior, you begin to become much more conscious of your mortality. When Abraham was 75, the Lord said, "I'm going to make you father of many nations." Now that's a tough thing to buy. He would have figured by the time Abraham was 76, God would have rewarded that prayer. Nope. 77. 78. 96. 97. 98. 99. It was when Abraham was 99 that God finally came and fulfilled that promise. Even though probably 100 or 1,000 times in between, Abraham might have doubted, saying, "I'll probably die before I ever get to see a child." God continually tests, and He gave Isaac to Abraham and Sarah when Abraham was 100 and Sarah was 91. But not even that was the greatest test of faith that God, out of love, gave Abraham so that through Abraham's journey, He could lead us all. 13 years later, as we read in the letter to the Hebrews today, God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac, the son of the promise, the son through whom he would become the father of many nations, on Mount Moriah. Isaac was too young to have made Abraham a grandfather. There were no descendants of Isaac yet. And God was challenging Abraham to sacrifice the one in whom he had placed all his hope, to lead him up to that mountain, the mountain on which the temple in Jerusalem would be eventually built, and sacrifice his son there. We know how that story finished. When Abraham was about to come down and slay his son, the angel of God stopped his hand. How could a dad ever do that? Abraham was totally convinced in the goodness and the love of God. And he knew that the Lord, who had already fulfilled all those promises, would still fulfill them through Isaac. And that if God were asking him to sacrifice Isaac, it must mean that after Isaac was dead, that God would do something totally unheard of. Raise his son from the dead. Which is what the end of the letter to the Hebrews tells us today. Abraham believed. He believed that God could do the impossible. Raise his son even from the dead. And that's why he was able to live by faith. This episode shows us what true faith is. It's a trust in God so strong, a trust in the Lord above everything else, that therefore we trust in what God is asking as a result of that confidence. Because we believe in God, we have an absolute assurance of what's hoped for and a deep, abiding conviction of things not seen. So in this year of faith, we're called to grow in that trust in God like Abraham did. God constantly challenges us like he challenged Abraham to leave our comfort zones, to trust in his words even if it seems to violate what we already know, to be willing to sacrifice even our greatest loves for the sake of him, knowing that in his goodness God always loves our loved ones even more than we do, and will always, in one way or the other, bring life and enormous good out of whatever sacrifice he asks us to make in faith. He's given us all big challenges to help us grow in faith over the last year or so. For me, he asked me to leave St. Anthony's in New Bedford, where I'd worked for 7 years. St. Anthony's in New Bedford is the most beautiful church in New England. Every day I would go into that church, I'd pinch myself, couldn't believe that I was pastor of a place so beautiful. Over 7 years, I had fixed almost all the problems that were there. I started with a $150,000 debt. I finished with a $500,000 surplus. I now had money so that I would not have to worry about it every night. I had gotten to know and love the people very much. They loved me. The Lord asked me to change, to come to a new place, to start all over again, where, frankly, I'm level with you, I didn't get a heck of a lot of love from a lot of the parishioners. In fact, I got a lot of this. I left a place where people loved me, and I came to a place where people were moaning and grumbling and saying nasty things sometimes that I would hear about from others. But I've seen, over the course of the last year, how it's been an enormous opportunity for me to grow in faith, to leave my own Ur of the Chaldees 13 miles down the road and come here to grow in faith as I grow to love you. But it's been a challenge. Likewise, I know it's been a challenge for you. Right before I came, 3 days before, all of you were asked to leave something that you love very much. For Notre Dame parishioners, to leave the reality of Notre Dame and enter into a new St. Bernadette's reality. For Immaculate Conception, leaving your beloved, beautiful church and coming to a new worship site. Saying goodbye to a pastor whom you had known and loved and grown to accompany on the journey of faith for a dozen years. It was hard. But it was a challenge to grow in faith. To be able to see certain realities that are the most important things of all. That, for example, no matter who's where in the chasuble, it's Christ preaching. It's Christ celebrating the sacraments. It's Christ calling, ordaining, commissioning, and guiding. It's been a challenge to get to know a new spiritual father, to get to know new spiritual brothers and sisters, to form those new bonds of faith. I'm grateful that so many of you have taken advantage of that challenge to forge those new bonds. That's what the Lord is asking of us in this year of faith and in the life of faith beyond. I urge you to continue to take advantage of these tests of faith so that during this year of faith, all of our faith may grow. Jesus, this year, wants to give us the greatest gift of our life, an increase in faith, so that we might become totally aware of his presence at every moment, His loving presence at every moment, and thereby become good and faithful disciples and help Him lead others to faith. He wishes to say to each of us what He said to the Canaanite woman in the Gospel: great is your faith. And He promises us that when He comes, if He finds us watchful and ready, with hearts lit with love for Him, He will have us sit down and eat and come to serve us. We've come here today out of faith, and the Lord meets us on that journey and doesn't allow our faith to go unrewarded. He Himself comes to meet us without delay, girds Himself with an apron, as He did during the Last Supper, and feeds us with the food of everlasting life. May this celebration of the Eucharist during this blessed year of faith increase our trust in God's words and in the assurance of the things we've hoped for in His Word made flesh, so that we might always grasp onto His promises and come through a life of vigilant faith to their eternal fulfillment. Praise be Jesus Christ.